27. Colonel Fedmon Cassad followed Moneta through the portal and found himself standing upon a vast lunar plain where a terrible tree of thorns rose 5 kilometers high into a blood-red sky. Human figures writhed on the many branches and spikes. The closer forms recognizably human and in pain. The farther ones dwarfed by distance until they resembled clusters of pale grapes. Cassad blinked and took a breath beneath the surface of his quicksilver skin suit. He looked around, past the silent form of Moneta, tearing his gaze from the obscenity of the tree. What he had thought was a lunar plain was the surface of Hyperion, at the entrance to the Valley of the Time Tombs, but a Hyperion terribly changed. The dunes were frozen and distorted, as if they had been blasted and glazed into glass. The boulders and cliff faces also had flowed and frozen like glaciers of pale stone. There was no atmosphere. The sky was black with the pitiless clarity of airless moons everywhere. The sun was not Hyperion's. The light was not of human experience. Cassad looked up, and the viewing filters of his skin suit polarized to deal with the terrible energies that filled the sky with bands of blood red and blossoms of fierce white light. Below him, the valley seemed to vibrate as if to unfelt tremors. The time tombs glowed of their own interior energies, pulses of cold light thrown many meters across the valley floor from every entrance, portal, and aperture. The tombs looked new, slick, and shining. Cassad realized that only the skin suit was allowing him to breathe and saving his flesh from the lunar cold that had replaced the desert warmth. He turned to look at Moneta, attempted to phrase an intelligent question, failed, and raised his gaze to the impossible tree once again. The thorn tree seemed to be made of the same steel and chrome and cartilage as the shrike itself. Obviously artificial, and yet horribly organic at the same instant. The trunk was 200 or 300 meters thick at its base, the lower branches almost as broad. But the smaller branches and thorns soon tapered to stiletto thinness as they splayed toward the sky with their awful impalement of human fruit. Impossible that humans so impaled could live for long. Doubly impossible that they could survive in the vacuum of this place outside of time and space. But survive and suffer they did. Cassad watched them writhe. All of them were alive, and all were in pain. Cassad was aware of the pain as a great sound beyond hearing, a huge, incessant foghorn of pain, as if thousands of untrained fingers were falling on thousands of keys, playing a massive pipe organ of pain. The pain was so palpable that he searched the blazing sky as if the tree were a pyre or huge beacon, with the waves of pain clearly visible. There was only the harsh light and lunar stillness. Cassad raised the magnification of his skin suit viewing lenses and looked from branch to branch, thorn to thorn. The people writhing there were of both genders and all ages. They wore a variety of torn clothing and disarrayed cosmetics that spanned many decades, if not centuries. Many of the styles were not familiar to Cassad, and he assumed that he was looking at victims from his future. There were thousands, tens of thousands of victims there. All were alive. All were in pain. Cassad stopped, focused on a branch 400 meters from the bottom, upon a cluster of thorns and bodies far out from the trunk, upon a single thorn 3 meters long from which a familiar purple cape billowed. The form there writhed, twisted, and turned toward Fedmon Cassad. He was looking at the impaled figure of Martin Silenus. Cassad cursed and formed fists so tight that the bones in his hands ached. He looked around for his weapons, magnifying vision to stare into the crystal monolith. There was nothing there. Colonel Cassad shook his head, realized that his skin suit was a better weapon than any he had brought to Hyperion, and began to stride toward the tree. He did not know how he would climb it, but he would find a way. He did not know how he would get Silenus down alive, get all of the victims down, but he would do so or die in the trying. Kassad took 10 paces and stopped on a curve of frozen dune. The shrike stood between him and the tree. He realized that he was grinning fiercely beneath the chromium force field of the skin suit. This was what he had waited many years for. This was the honorable warfare he had pledged his life and honor for 20 years earlier in the Force Masada ceremony. Single combat between warriors. A struggle to protect the innocent. Kassad grinned, flattened the edge of his right hand into a silver blade, and stepped forward. Kassad! He looked back at Moneta's call. Light cascaded on the quick silver surface of her nude body as she pointed toward the valley. A second shrike was emerging from the tomb called the Sphinx. Farther down the valley, a shrike stepped from the entrance to the jade tomb. Harsh light glinted from spikes and razor wire as another emerged from the obelisk half a click away. Kassad ignored them and turned back toward the tree and its protector. 100 shrikes stood between Kassad and the tree. He blinked, and 100 more appeared to his left. He looked behind him, and a legion of shrikes stood as impassively as sculptures on the cold dunes and melted boulders of the desert. Kassad pounded his own knee with his fist. Damn! Moneta came up next to him until their arms touched. The skin suits flowed together, and he felt the warm flesh of her forearm against his. She stood thigh to thigh with him. I love you, Kassad. He gazed at the perfect lines of her face, ignored the riot of reflections and colors there, and tried to remember the first time he had met her. In the forest near Agincourt, he remembered her startling green eyes and short brown hair, the fullness of her lower lip, and how it tasted of tears the time he accidentally had bitten it. He raised a hand and touched her cheek, feeling the warmth of skin beneath the skin suit. If you love me, he said, stay here. Colonel Fedmon Kassad turned away then, and let out a scream only he could hear in the lunar silence. A scream part rebel yell from the distant human past, part force cadet graduation shout, part karate cry, and part pure defiance. He ran across the dunes toward the thorn tree and the shrike directly in front of it. There were thousands of shrikes in the hills and valleys now. Talons clicked open in unison. Light glinted on tens of thousands of scalpel-sharp blades and thorns. Kassad ignored the others and ran toward the shrike he thought was the first he had seen. Above the thing, human forms writhed in the solitude of their pain. The shrike he was running toward opened its arms as if offering an embrace. Curved blades on its wrists, joints, and chest seemed to extend from hidden sheaths. Kassad screamed and closed the remaining distance.